Sack up, pussies. It's the SML Podcast.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the SML Podcast, episode number 307. I am your host, Joe. Got a bunch of reviews on this episode to take care of. No interviews this time. It's going to be a nice change of pace. Well, I don't know if it's going to be a nice change of pace, but it's going to be a change. Back to reviews. I'm rambling, and the first person joining us is Purnell, so stop me from rambling, Purnell. How are you doing?
I don't know, because now I feel the odd temptation to ramble. So, nah, I stop.
What do you want to ramble about?
Not too much, I guess. I just feel like I need more money. It ain't coming fast enough, and all this entertainment's popping off like nobody's business. I need money for things.
Me too.
I work for the money. You got to pay your bills, and then pay the bills, and you have a little bit left over for fun. But you don't have time for the fun. It's just a very baffling cycle.
Did you get a pre-order on the Xbox One X yet?
Oh my God, man. Systems are the last thing on my mind right now. I'm like, shoot, I'm still in the position where it's like I'm trying to keep up with games I want to get. I remember when I was younger, I used to chase after new machines. Like, oh, this new system's coming out. I got to get it right now. I think the Switch will have been the last one where I'm like, I got to get it on launch. I can't even imagine at this point. Like, what can they do at this point to make a guy who has like no freaking money break his neck to get a system anymore? Like, I don't even know. like it can wait right now. As long as the other systems I've got are still breathing, I have to get stuff for those and keep my money in my pocket.
Oh, I know that feeling. But I watched the whole GameCom presentation, and as disappointed as I was with that 90 minutes, which we'll talk about on the next episode on our Friday show. Because, you know, we save all the news for that one, but I'm just, I don't know, I was so let down by it and so underwhelmed, but I'm so excited for the X. I'm looking forward to, like, a crazy powerful console.
So, you're still looking to grab it on day one, but it sounds like you're saying they didn't really do much of an enticing, they didn't do much enticing on the actual conference they had, where I suppose it was on the spotlight, because I didn't watch it because I was stuck at work, but, I was curious about it because you were excited about it, and I heard about the fact that they're going to talk about the S there, and that's when they opened up pre-orders, if I remember correctly, as well. So
yeah, they announced that pre-orders opened for the X that day, and you know, a bunch of places. I guess the first wave of the consoles is going to be the Project Scorpio edition. It's kind of like the day one console, how it had like a special design on it, and the controller said day one. Going to be kind of like that, where it's going to have a special graphic on the console. It's going to come with a special design on the vertical stand. It's going to have a Project Scorpio in green text on both the console and the controller. And there's a bunch of places selling out.
That's pretty good then. I mean, they're getting that sales bump that they wanted. So
yeah, so
hopefully that leads to good things to come.
Hopefully it'll get some sales on the consoles, and then Microsoft could stop fucking around with hardware and dashboard updates and go back to making some motherfucking games.
That would be nice. That would be really nice.
Yeah,
it's pretty much the only thing they're met. That's their only hurdle. They clear that, I think they'll be back in business.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the system is starved for games. We're constantly covering new games on the show here that are coming out on the system. But as cool as indie games are, nothing compares to first-party AAA exclusives.
And that's what I mean.
Crackdown was supposed to be that AAA first-party exclusive, and that got bumped to the spring. So got shit.
Yeah, so hope maybe somebody's holding back, and you'll see some interesting Christmas surprises popping down the lane.
Yeah, the closest they got to, like, new game reveals was they announced three of the old Xbox 360 Kinect games are going to be getting re-released for the Xbox One with, like, 4K visuals and controller support now. And Like, and nothing huge, but at least stuff is releasing.
Yeah, they're trying, but it's like you said earlier. Gotta get that, they got to get those triples out. They got to get that crackdown on the table instead of being in the ether. Get it on the shelf. And then, I don't know. Like, I don't know what else is down the line, but right now, as I mentioned earlier, there's enough games popping off in general for me to play across the systems I've got that I'm not, you know, chomping at the bit. But I know a lot of other people have a lot more free time than I do, which means they'd be the ones that are, like, pretty much chasing that new AAA product. So,
no. I mean, as cool as it is that you're going to have the best looking versions of games on the X, like, I'd still like to have shit like Nier or Yakuza or fucking the Kingdom Hearts collection or literally any RPGs at this point.
If they're still doing, I can't remember if they're still doing it or not, but if they're still putting Kingdom Hearts 3 on there, they're going to ultimately have to do some kind of collection beforehand.
It's Square. They don't have to.
Figure it out, guys. It's all you can read a wiki. It's no big deal.
I don't fucking know. But
nobody's.
We should probably talk about games because we do have a handful to take care of. I know you're going to be hanging around for two of them, and then we got a bunch of the usual friends joining through the show. But we're going to kick things off with a game called Black Sea Odyssey, developed by Black Sea Odyssey and published by Spiral Summit Games. It'll be releasing August 23rd on the Xbox One for $14.99 and is already available on Steam. Enter the Black Sea Odyssey, a violent top-down roguelite space shoot-em-up RPG. Holy shit, that's a lot of descriptors bundled together. Brimming with colossal creatures and runic technologies, explore dangerous interstellar spacescapes as you hunt enormous space behemoths with a harpoon and rune-infused spears. Pernell, what'd you think of this one?
It's actually a pretty interesting game. I've played games like this in the past, so like it's not, I wouldn't say, standout uniquer, except for one actually interesting component, which didn't click for me initially, but now I kind of like it, which is that, first and foremost, the game itself is your traditional sort of roguelike bounty game. And what that means is you start out in a hub after choosing the character that you want to play as. And then from there, you have to choose one of the bounties that are available to be selected. They usually have a difficulty setting attributed to them that determines, you know, how hard is it going to be to go look for this guy or beat him for that matter. So, and it's different, you know, alien species, all weird looking things like a giant squid man and a, you know, pus ball. But anyway, once you select it, you go to the space environment, and it's pretty much just like a randomly generated or procedurally generated environment. Different, I would say, just like wall hangouts that are flopping around, some treasure chests hanging off on some of them. And the game has different sonar sections that you'll see on the mini map in the corner. From what I've devised, because the tutorial doesn't explain it, you just kind of have to gauge it. You're supposed to fly to each of those individual radar points, hoping that the bounty is there. And sometimes enemies will pop up within the bounty, and you have to attack them with your weaponry. And your weaponry composes of primarily two things. You have a spear, which you throw spears, and depending on the character and the loadout you have for the spear, or the spear that you actually have equipped, because you can get different spears by completing different objectives, that determines your spear's properties, whether it's the attack power, the, you know, damage per second, you know, if it has any elemental properties and things of that nature. But then you also get a harpoon, which I think is awesome. What it is, you have to hold down the trigger button on the left side, and then you let it go, and it latches onto the enemy that you're attacking. Now, it does damage, and you can leave it in the enemy if it actually connects, because sometimes it doesn't. But you can leave it inside the enemy, and you'll be attached to it. It can drag you around and whatnot, kind of like, you know, Ahab and the whale. And then you can attack it with your normal weaponry to continue doing damage to it while you're attached to the enemy. But every once in a while, once you've done enough damage, the harpoon will be capable of ripping an appendage off of the enemy. And that does major damage. And I believe it also affects the enemy's movement. Like, mm-hmm. One thing, like I was fighting one boss, it was a giant squid with four eyeballs. and I pulled off all four of his eyes. And from what I could tell, it seemed like he couldn't see me anymore. And it was just kind of floating around in circles like, where is this guy? I'm going to shit pus everywhere. Hopefully it hits him. But that was pretty much like my experience with that concept, those points. But I do know that every once in a while, though surprisingly rarely it happened for me, depending on the enemies you kill, sometimes they'll drop a key. And you can take that key to different treasure chests that are strewn about the map, and that will allow you to pick up various runes. And you can attach runes to either the spear on your ship or the actual ship itself, and they provide different properties for the weaponry that you use. Like, I have one right now that allows you to leave a trail of cold air frost, so it essentially slows enemies down and hurts them. Though the funny thing about it is the way the game lays out the cursor, your cursor is a giant hand, or almost a giant, but it's just a hand. But whenever you layer over the item that you want to get information on, the part of the hand covers up the name of the item. So I'm pretty sure this is called the Ice Trail, but all I see is Trail 3.
Yeah, so, I noticed that.
You can't make the cursor go away. But, you know, but honestly, I see potential in this game being pretty fun. It's just a matter of, you know, have you had enough of the, you know, procedurally generated maps and, you know, the usual spiel, like, you know, like Flint Hook does, and like, was that one ship game I played on your show a couple of months, like a month or so ago, like Cryptarch, I think it was called. That's a similar concept too. The games themselves play differently, but as far as how you choose levels and how they differentiate between levels, those are fairly similar things. So, but one thing I wasn't sure of, and maybe you have a better understanding of this because I didn't notice it, can you buy stuff outside of the levels?
Yeah, there's at the bottom there's a shop option, and I was kind of confused. It was like press X to buy or sell. So I'm like hitting the X button, like, does his inventory change or something? At the very bottom right, there's like six different items that's his actual shop inventory. That I didn't notice, like, the first four times I was in this shop. I agree with what you're saying, that it's a lot of fun. I will say, when I first started playing the game, like, even with the tutorial, I felt so lost. It just drops you in a level, and then go. I'm like, what are these icons that are, like, flashing on the radar? Like, why are they green, but then they turned red, and like, I realized that if they're green and they're flashing, there's enemies there that you can kill. And once they go red, you're currently fighting them. And if it disappears, you killed them.
Go figure. And then, as far as the boss goes, if I'm thinking the same thing you are, all you do is go to it. And if the boss is there, he'll pop up.
Yep.
But if it isn't, then he's not. But, I mean, one thing I liked about that I forgot to mention is your character has to get status effects, too. I've been frozen, and more times than I can, I've been poisoned, of course, but more times I can kind of develop psychedelic issues, which are actually pretty funny. I've crashed into mushrooms, and that gives you psychedelic properties. Yep, so
tripping balls.
You like freaking like squid babies are like shooting like neon spray everywhere, and just the game has trouble. It's hard to even tell what you're doing. Like, I've had it slow down on me. I had to speed up and slow down erratically while I'm in that phase. It can get pretty weird, but I do like the status effects in this game, too. I do like that the fact that the spears you can equip on your guy actually have different properties, but it sucks that you have to unlock them by fulfilling conditions. Like, you don't just buy them.
Yeah.
So, like, that might be a good thing. Who knows? But some of those challenges look pretty hard, so I don't know.
I do wish the game was a bit more clear on, like, when you're taking damage or stuff like that. Like, I've seen my ship flashing and my guy going, and it seems like I'm taking damage, but I can't tell if my health went down and I didn't see anything at all near me that could have hit me. Like, I don't know if it was a delayed sound effect and flash or what the hell was going on, but, like, when I first started the game, it just wasn't really clicking with me, and then I think my second run through the game, because the first time I got to, like, you know, I beat the first boss, and then I went to the second stage, and I died, and I had no clue what the fuck was going on. And then the second time I went through, everything clicked, and everything made sense.
The one thing I know is that maybe you had a better experience, possibly due to finding armaments to equip your spear with, but Isn't it hard as the dickens to aim the spear at tiny enemies?
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. Like, it was driving me nuts. These little frog things were flopping around. They were harder than the bosses were.
Fuck those frogs, by the way.
They are awful.
The little yellow poison frogs, they could kiss my ass.
They were freaking annoying. You're like, throwing spears. Like, come on, hit one of them. Shit.
And
it comes right up to your face and barfs on you.
In the tutorial mission where there's just the one little tiny enemy flying around you that's like, aim and shoot. It took me 3 minutes to kill that thing.
It took a minute. I agree. I was like, come on, this is the tutorial and I'm fucking it up.
I couldn't hit the thing. But as you go on, you find like the actual enemies that are in the areas that you got to kill. They're pretty nice size, so they're much easier to hit. So if you play the tutorial and you get frustrated that you're not hitting anything, just play the normal game. After you play it like around, everything will click, everything will make sense. And I'm really, really, really enjoying this game.
Yeah, it's definitely a good game. I just think hopefully maybe there's something they can do to make that stupid hand go away over the name of the item.
Agreed.
It's irksome. So I do like that you can upgrade the bestiary and also kind of get the gist of what the enemy types are if you want to just kind of follow them. And though I didn't see all the environments, I like that there's different environments, and different environments have their own species that hang out there.
Yeah, I really dig it. What are your thoughts for $15?
It goes back to what I was saying before. I mean, there are a lot of procedural generated games out there. However, just because a number of them exist doesn't make this game necessarily bad by default. It does have that cool harpooning mechanic to it, and I can't think of too many games that offer that. So it kind of taps into a little bit of a, again, like Moby Dick's kind of steals. Like you throw the spear at the guy that's kind of riding the wrong and throwing some spears at him while you're hanging on with the harpoon. So as long as you aren't tired of the, again, procedural generated select your bounty style gameplay or game mechanic, I'd say it's a byproduct. Get it? It's a product to buy.
I agree. I think this game does enough different compared to how many, like, there's been so many twin stick roguelike style games that have been coming out lately. I think this one does enough differently that it's not going to feel like more of the same. And between the fact that you're like flying around instead of just walking, so you have the different physics there, the harpoon mechanic and all the different upgrades that you can get and fuck around with and try different combinations and different rarities. And the fact that every time you play, you're going to get different bosses and different levels. I think if you got $15, it's a worthwhile pickup. I got to give it a buy it.
Okay. I think we agreed on that one for sure.
Indeed. Like the first half hour I spent with the game, I'm like, I'm not really digging this. I'm not sure what I'm going to say about it. But the more time I spent with it and the more everything just clicked into place and made sense, it just really, really cool game. And I really dug it.
Ba-ba-ba-ba. So you've heard it here. It's a good game. Give it a shot. If you got the money.
Indeed.
You live in a world where there's more games than money. Damn it.
Next game to talk about. We're going to take a break from you, Purnell. I got an email review to take care of called Techno Babylon, developed by Technocrat Games, published by Wadjet Eye Games. Some weird company names out there. This one released August 16th on iOS for $4.99. City of Newton 2087. Cell agents Charlie Regis and Max Lau are investigating a serial mindjacker who is tapping into the neural wiring of seemingly ordinary citizens, stealing their knowledge and leaving them dead. An agoraphobic net addict named Latha Sesame... These names, good lord, might be the next target, but when Charlie's past comes back to haunt him, he and his partner find themselves on the opposite side of the law with Lass's fate in the crossfire. Our good friend Jacob Garner wrote in this one, and by the way, congrats to you, Jacob. He just had another babby.
A babby?
Yeah, he just had a new babby. So
he's going to need a lot more game reviews himself, because he ain't going to be getting no more for a bit.
He told me that he was actually playing the game while he was in the hospital, while his wife was like recovering and all that stuff. So I guess when you have time to kill, you know, this should be a good one. But this is his email. Here's what he has to say. Techno Babylon is a point-and-click adventure game by Wad Jet Eye Games and Technocrat. Do you yearn for the glory days of LucasArts with games such as Sam & Max Hit the Road, Full Throttle, Grim Fandango, and Day of the Tentacle? Then holy crap, do we have a game for you with Techno Babylon, a $5 game for iOS that harkens back to those days. It's a cyberpunk game involving multiple characters with interwoven stories to take on a rogue city administrative AI. This simple plot I've described doesn't do the game justice, as the storyline flows pretty well and the characters and their dialogue feel real. The art for the game is beautiful, and I was pleased that there was voice acting and good background music. The puzzles for the game were fairly well done, challenging for the most part. The game allows you to have multiple solutions for certain puzzles, but they don't affect the game's plot that much overall, much like how Advent Rising gave you the decision of whether your brother or fiancé would die first. Whoever you didn't pick would die later in the game. Techno Babylon gives us something similar. While the puzzle's pretty much leading you in the same way, you just get to decide one of two endings for the game. My only issue with the puzzle is that the game doesn't do any real hand-holding for those not familiar with the point-and-click genre, beyond explaining how gameplay works, so I can see the first chapter turning a lot of potential buyers off, as the solution wasn't particularly obvious. If you're willing to stick with the game, hell, I'm sure there's a game facts written for this by the time the review airs, you're in for your huge treat. The game does have a save feature that allows you to save pretty much anywhere, so while I can't recommend it for commutes and bathroom breaks, it still looks good and plays great on iOS. Techno Babylon is by far my favorite game that I've had to review for the podcast. I highly recommend it to those who want a great point-and-click adventure, and if you're not familiar with the genre, the $5 price tag is a good start for you to learn. So that sounds really good, actually.
Yeah, he was definitely enthusiastic about it from what I could tell.
Yeah, when I was asking him, was like, hey, any word on the review? Because I was hoping to get it on our last episode, but with the whole, you know, having a kid, yeah. I kind of figured there'd be a slight delay. He's like, I'm so sorry I didn't get this written to you in time, but oh my God, this is the best game you've ever had me cover.
That's what's up. He's like, I got a baby coming, but enough about the baby. This game.
Fuck kids. It's all about Techno Babylon. And $5 for Techno Babylon is significantly cheaper than having a baby.
This is very true. This is very true.
There's a fun fact.
It could be a cheap yet affordable gift for someone who just had a baby. Like, look, you're going to need some downtime. Don't tell the missus, but here's a code.
Oh, when you're tired man.
Of baby babble, here's some techno babble.
Indeed. But anyway, back to you, Purnell, because this show's all about you, at least for this next game. Next game to talk about is called Circuit Breakers, developed by Traverske, I think, published by Excalibur Games. It released August 15th on Xbox One for $9.99, previously on Steam and the PS4. Far in the future, advances in artificial intelligence have created the first truly sapient AI, FIRST. Short for First Intelligent Robotic System Model 2 System. What the hell?
That sounds ridiculous.
Fearing for its safety in a galaxy of savage humans, First escaped to the depths of space on a distant planet, finally landed, building an army for their inevitable return. Purnell, what'd you think of Circuit Breakers?
Well, Circuit Breakers is an interesting thing. It's essentially, just to get it out there, it's pretty much... attempt to pull in the love that was Smash TV from back in the day. And I think it mostly delivers on that front. I have like one tiny nitpick on that whole thing, though, which is like, if I remember correctly, because it's been a long time, Smash TV, when you killed a certain guys or that are a certain pause, you get weapons that were temporary and they boosted your attack power or whatnot. This game, there are pickups, but all of your weaponry is attributed to the one gun you have to start. So what it is you'll pick a character, and that character has a weapon type. For example, I might have a machine gun, might have a missile launcher, a laser, and a chain gun. There's other unlockable characters, too, but based off the default guys, those are pretty much the things you're starting with. So you choose a character, and that's the weapon type that character will have. As you play the game, waves of robots come into rooms, just like Smash TV did it, and you have a twin-stick style game where the right stick is your fire, left stick is motion, and left I want to say left trigger is a shield that you can put up. But all these things run on something called Energium. Energium. God, I just say energy. Anyway, Energium. And what
it's
it is
one of those.
Yeah, they got to make it feel futuristic. start out with like a level one gun. Every time you kill an enemy, they drop Energium. After you collect a certain amount of it, your gun levels up and you reach another, tier of weaponry for that character's weapon style. Every time you fire a bullet, though, you decrease it. So there's like a weird tug of war between firing, knowing when to hold them and knowing when to fold them. Or I guess it would that be knowing when to hold them and when to blow them out your ear. But so that's pretty much the entire concept of the game. There are pickups, health items, additional energium, and exploding blocks, which will allow you to kind of clear a segment of the room out. The only other thing I can think of from the main game is there are these devices you can unlock. I don't know what the exact name is off the top of my head, but they're basically modifiers. And each modifier does two things. One, for everyone you equip, it increases your score potential on the level by a certain multiplier. So the more of them you have on, the higher your score potential is for when you play. But the other thing that they do is they create, they make things harder for you as you play. I only unlocked a few, but one, for example, is like more elite enemies will appear. So like enemies that are a pain in the behind, like this one like spinning tanker that fires bullets in all directions, he'll start popping up pretty early in the game, and he's a jerk, especially if you ever had time to build up your gunfire, you have to actually break him. So that's pretty much how the unlimited mode works. That's arcade mode. You basically pick the mode, you play indefinitely until you die, and you can just go for a high score. There's another mode called Score Attack, which is the same style, being that you choose a character and you choose your level, your number of modifiers. But in the case, instead of being endless, you choose a different course. There's a total of six different courses in the game. And each one is composed of a series of rooms that are pre-established that you run through. You take out the waves in those, and you go for a high score and a high time. So that's pretty much what you do when you want to do repetitive stuff with the intent of getting better scores each time. So between those two modes and the characters that you can select, there are different objectives you can try to fulfill with each of the different characters. And when you fulfill objectives, you unlock things on a bingo board of sorts. I don't know if you actually get anything for filling in any of the grids, mind you. They're just grids. But for each accomplishment you fulfill, you get certain things. Some things are kind of moot, like logbook entries. So you can say, hey, I want to know what the Red Rum enemy's like. You go to the logbook and it'll say something cheesy like, Red Rum is a robot. Murder spelled backwards. Hong Kong. I was like, who cares? But the other things you can unlock, which are actually cool, are additional, that's what they're called, cores. Additional cores, which will allow you to get more modifiers activated, which will allow you to get higher score opportunities when you play the game, which will also give you opportunities to unlock other things, because some of the challenges require you to be playing the game with specific cores opened up. So you can unlock additional characters, additional cores, and new courses for the game for the Score Attack mode. And that's pretty much the entire game. Like, this is a very straightforward product. I didn't have any issues with the controls. They're pretty straightforward. In games of this manner, though, this game is no different in the sense that it's very easy to lose your character in the chaos, though.
Oh, God. I've done
that more than a few times. But, again, I don't really hold that against the game, because that's kind of how bullet hell twin stick games tend to do. You just kind of find your guy, keep your eyes on him as best you can, just kind of bob and weave as best you can. And you also have your shield button if you just kind of want to feel like you need to find yourself while not getting the crap blown out of you. Just pop a shield to see where it pops up and also get a quick defense bump. So I did enjoy the game. Like I said, I was playing this thinking, okay, I'm just going to play like a round or three or four or whatever. But I put a bit of time in this solely because I was kind of obsessed with going for a high score, constantly killing more guys. Because it does have that one more round feel due to the fact that it's simple. There are a lot of games like this, but there's a reason why there are a lot of games like this. It's because they tap into that one more round. All I got to do is blow up a bunch of stuff, twitch, blow up stuff, die, wash, rinse, repeat. This game has that, and it works out pretty well. I did enjoy what I was playing of it, and I do feel as though I could see myself playing more of this game in the future, should time allow. But But it is definitely a game I can see myself wanting to play a little bit more of to see if I can unlock more characters and things of that nature, see how the different weapons work. And also just to see what some of the different bosses are like, aside from the ones I've actually fought.
No, I definitely agree it's one of those one more round kind of games. Ashley went to go grab dinner earlier, and I was playing the game, and I did a round while she was gone. She came back, I did another round, and she's sitting there starting to eat the pizza. I'm like, hold on, I'm almost done, I'm almost done, I'm almost done. So I just kept going. You mentioned you were wondering if you get anything for unlocking all the things on a challenge board. That's where achievements are tied in.
Oh.
7 of the game's 15 achievements are tied to unlocking the 7 characters' complete challenge board, including the hidden characters or the unlockable characters. Achievement hunters are going to hate the fact that those 7 achievements take up 700 of the achievement points of the game.
Yeesh.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of replaying all of the challenge, all the score attack stages, and killing everything with each of the characters. I think each character has one of the challenges to play with the character for either 2 or 4 hours, something like that. So this is going to be very time-consuming for achievement collectors who need to get everything.
Oh, God, yeah, I'm looking at this. They definitely will be a pain in the butt. Play for 2 hours, clear. There's different levels that they want you to clear in the circuit mode with 2 million points.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to become good enough with every character to clear almost every circuit with 2 million points apiece.
Yeah, which means that you need to get a high combo and not lose that combo. Because the higher your combo, the bigger a multiplier you get on the enemies you kill, and the higher score you get, obviously, because that's how shit works in score-based games.
And, of course, you want the cores. So not only do you have to do all those things, but you also have to activate cores to increase your score multiplier. So don't get hit, and enemies are a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. So good luck with that.
And then I'm not sure if you ran into it, but I ran into a ton of slowdown and lagginess when things got hectic.
I don't think I ever did, actually, though I could see that being something that I could expect to happen because of the style of game. There's a lot of particles that pop up on the screen when you're blowing through particularly large mobs of robots.
Yeah, between, like, there had to be times with, like, 50, 70 enemies on screen at one time. Each one you blow up drops a couple of the energium crystals. Blowing up boxes, those drop a bunch. Even the bosses, like when you blow up sections of the bosses, they just like shit those blobs everywhere. I've definitely had a few times where things are getting slow and laggy, and I don't know if that's something they can optimize or take care of. And then my only other gripe with the game is that as fun as it is to go through over and over and over, it doesn't really change up too much every time.
It doesn't, which is a very unfortunate component. And that was why I was sad about the fact that character. It has a similar problem that Assault Android Cactus had, but the only difference being is that Assault Android Cactus was more so built around short bursts of stages, not the endless mode, which was like a sub mode. Mm-hmm. This game is endless mode and then 6 small stages. So it's not quite as effective in that regard. So it's still fun, but due to the fact that you basically pick your guy, and from the start, you can do everything. He's capable of everything he's going to do.
Yeah.
Right there. It's like, well, endless mode doesn't have as much luster as I would like it to have. But it's still fun. Just know that you're not going to be changing your gameplay style as the game progresses. You're just going to get in there. You know what your weapon does. So your whole goal is just keep energy high.
Yeah. Pretty much, if you play around to this game and you really love it, you're going to keep loving it. If you play around to this game and you're not really seeing the point of it, you're probably not going to play it that much more. For $10, I got a recommend to try it. It's really fun, but I don't think it's a must-own kind of game. But it's still really fun, and if you've got the money lying around and you feel like grabbing something to kill a couple of hours with, you could do a lot worse than this, that's for damn sure. It's fun, it's addictive, it's enjoyable, but it's just not a must-own kind of game.
I agree. Like, it's definitely more of a try it, because my brain still falls back on, like, hey, if you only can get one of these kinds of games, Assault Android Cactus is out there somewhere.
But not on Xbox. So.
Oh, so seriously?
Yup.
Oh, that's some trash.
No shit. I had them on the show when it first launched on Steam, and I'm like, is it going to come to Xbox? And they're like, no, probably not.
They flat out said they weren't even entertaining the thought.
Pretty much.
Well, that sucks.
It's on PlayStation, so if you have a PlayStation, you could grab Assault Android Cactus.
Xbox, I can't think of other games that play like this. Can you?
There's a bunch. Black Sea Odyssey is similar in style with the whole twin stick.
It's similar, but I would say I wouldn't want to. I mean, because I was going to make that comment earlier. I was like, well, compared to this, I'd say Black Sea Odyssey is the better of the two. But Black Sea Odyssey isn't a frenetic twin stick. This is frenetic. You're basically going nuts, blah, kill everything. And that game is, there's still a lot of, it's a little bit more methodical, I think.
I mean, there's Kill All Zombies, there's Crimson Land, one we covered recently, Iron Cryptical, which is actually one of the inductees into our Hall of Fame.
That was a cool game, actually.
I fucking loved Iron Cryptical.
Well, there you go.
I do feel bad for Circuit Breakers, because compared to Iron Cryptical, like, I don't think anything's going to topple Iron Cryptical for me anytime soon in terms of, like, top-down twin-stick style games. It clicked perfectly for me.
And at least in that game, there are things you can find that kind of change the gameplay up while you're in the dungeon, so.
Yeah. Although I do appreciate the whole challenge board thing with the Circuit Breakers, how each character has its own dedicated challenge board, and then the general one with a bunch of different things on there. So, like I said, it's a recommend to try it. Still a lot of fun. And if you got $10, it's worth checking out.
And I guess the last thing to point out in regards to this game is that even though we mentioned Iron Cryptical and whatnot, if you're looking for something that's pretty much Smash TV, then you're looking at this. Because this is pretty much definitely, aside from item weapon pickups, this is pretty much Smash TV. Or an attempt at Smash TV.
Indeed. Well, Pernell, thank you so much for hanging out and covering those two games with me. And hanging out and listening to Jacob's review as he had a babby and all. Gonna have to move on. We have a bunch of other games to talk about, but thanks for joining. It's always good having you on.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure. It was my pleasure blowing up robots and stabbing fish in the eye.
Indeed. Poor fishy.
Poor my ass. They were barfing all over the place and biting at my ship. They deserve what they got. I hope they burn in hell.
Next game to talk about is called Eliosi's Hunt, developed and published by TDZ Games. Released August 15th on PS4 and Steam for $4.99. In an alien world where bounty hunters are seen as heroes for maintaining the order, Eliosi dreams of becoming one of them, but he will have to overcome the weaknesses and smallness of his race to fulfill his dream. During your journey, you will face monsters from nature, mutated creatures, bloodthirsty tribes, natural phenomena, and more. Lead Eliosi into making his dream come true in this hardcore top-down shooter and platformer. Brought in our good friend Chris Taylor to talk about this one. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Just survived that intense solar eclipse from earlier today. We're recording this on Monday.
Indeed we are. I addressed it earlier that, like, with how I'm recording this show, like, we're talking about something on one day, and then it's magically a different day, and then magically a different day. So I can only wonder what's going through the listeners' heads, but I'm pretty much repeating what I said on the last review. Or who knows, maybe I'll switch it up and I'll put this earlier in the show. So I'll be talking about something we already talked about, but it didn't happen yet.
Oh, well, we could pretend it's the 30th. Or, like, next Wednesday.
Today's actually still, June 12th.
So. Oh, wow. Okay.
So, what is Eliosi's Hunt?
Eliosi's Hunt on the
besides
PS4.
Besides the game that I keep calling Eliosi's Quest.
it's kind of a quest. I mean, your quest is to hunt things, so that's you know, it's just another step towards that that destination. Eliosi's Hunt is actually, funny enough, the synopsis that you just gave is about more storyline than I think the game gives you.
Oh, God.
I started it. There's a little opening cinematic of a little alien guy walking around in a in some kind of bar looking thing. And then there was a menu and I could start the first level. That's literally the extent of the story. But it does seem like this is a game that's more focused on stage-based sort of... It calls it a shooter. I want to call it more of, like, it's a like a skill platformer. Like, it's really skill-based, and there is occasionally shooting. But the shooting is more... Like, okay, so here's how it goes. you get into this game, it zaps you to an alien planet, and you walk around, and you basically figure out things like everything in this game is really, really alien. Like, there's not a standard thing to be found. So, like, you have to shoot certain plants to get them to open up, kind of like a door, and you have to, you know, jump around. Occasionally you find...
Jump it out. Jump it out. Jump up, jump okay. up, we get... Sorry.
That's
one,
okay.
One of those days.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can totally jump up and get down on a jetpack, and you can pick up a flamethrower to bring that house of pain to the enemies. No, I'll stop with the references. Mostly because I've run out of them. So, like, there is a shooting element to it, but in the first stage I played, it took me 2 whole days to get through just that stage because the difficulty is really, really high in this. And I would say that there were only, besides the boss at the end of the stage, there were 2 kinds of enemies. There were flying ones and there were running ones. And, like, in shooting them, it was more like... It wasn't, can you skillfully aim at them and, like, take down, like, all these swaths of enemies with your giant, high-powered, like, arsenal of weaponry or flamethrower. But it was more like, can you take down way more enemies than your gun can shoot? Like, or can you figure out a way to get away from them and, like, take them off, you know, out, like, as they turn a corner or something like that? Because the way you start out in the game... you only have between 1 and 3 hits before you're dead, and there's no, like, invincibility frames or anything like that. So if you get ganged up on by enemies, your gun does not help.
Oh, man.
It's less of a shooter and more of a dyer. Like, you'll die 12 times before you even figure out how you can start shooting these enemies to where they don't, like, utterly destroy you within seconds. And to me, that's kind of exciting because that's an interesting way to approach platformers, if you will, because the platforming stuff is, like, the real challenge. But, like, so in that sense, the enemies just become another obstacle more than, like, something like a real shooter where really you build up the biggest arsenal possible and take down as many enemies as possible. It's not like that at all.
Yeah.
The platforms that, like, give you the most trouble are these vines that kind of protrude from, you know, the bottomless pits and sort of swing back and forth. And so you have to jump on them, swing over, and jump onto the next one. Each one will take so many lives. And there's no count to the lives. It's there's a checkpoint before every obstacle, essentially. And so there's no real way to, like, lose it all or anything like that. And once you actually pick up an item, there's items scattered out throughout the stages that are collectibles that allow you to power up your bounty hunter. So, which is actually kind of cool, I think, because it's a skill tree based experience system. So you can, like, throw in more skill into your gun and make it shoot faster, or you can make yourself control better through your jumps. So you can either become a better shooter or a better platformer as a character. So you can kind of mitigate your own weaknesses in that sense. But anyways, yeah, so, you know, it's jumping across vines and, you know, doing things like that, and just, you know, you jump, fall, end up at the save point instantly and then just do the whole thing over again until you get it. So in that sense, it's actually pretty good. The issues I had with the game were mostly just that sometimes those vines would cause some like slowdown and some clipping, like frame rate clipping. So that was an interesting like problem, but I was able to get through it. At first, I was really frustrated with how hard the game was, and then once I kind of figured out sort of the game's own system for, like I said, mitigating that difficulty through an item skill tree, like experience system, whatever, then I was like, oh, this is actually kind of clever.
Nice.
I was approaching it from a shooter perspective, not realizing that the enemies are more part of the puzzle than they are just something to eviscerate.
Yeah.
And once I kind of dug in and actually beat that first level, which I at least wanted to beat the one level before I reviewed it, because I was like, this is not going to be a good review if I can't beat the first level. But that's just telling you how hard it was. Then I found out once I beat it, and, you know, you keep all the items and such, and you can revisit the levels, and actually there are, you know, accomplishments that you can get, you know, trophies and such for doing various things, but you can also, if you wish, like, speed run through the levels once you've beaten them. And an interesting aspect that the game kind of threw in that I like is that the save points where you respawn if you die, you can save at them, but if you choose to destroy them, it will actually boost your character's movement speed for the rest of the level.
Huh.
So, you can run through the level, and in order to get the best time, you can destroy all those spawn points, and it's hugely risky, because the first time you die, you get taken all the way back to the first of the level, but that's obviously the best way that you can get through the stage as quickly as possible. So I was like, that's an interesting feature.
It sounds pretty enjoyable, so I gotta know, for $5, what's your verdict on this?
So the way I usually do these reviews is I don't look at the prices of the game until I'm actually put on the spot to recommend it. And I will tell you, going into this review and like talking to you, I fully expected the game to be about $15, because it's
$5.
Yeah, $5, it's a definite, like, if you like, you know, a good challenge, and the game itself is really pretty, the enemies, the aliens, the environments all look really cool and, like, really unique. Yeah, I mean, it would be a good $15 game, but at $5, I'd say definitely pick it up. It's just not for those who want any kind of casual experience out of it, and it's not for people who want a lot of story.
Makes sense.
As far as I can tell, the entire story is told through the load screens in like single sentences. So
some games, that's all you need.
Hey, that's more than we got like in the NES era. So
very true. In our day, we were lucky to get a congratulation.
Yeah, exactly. This story is happy end.
Story is happy end. I don't think I've ever seen that one.
I think that's Ghosts and Goblins if you beat it the second time.
Man, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I've never beat it, so I don't know.
Oh, no one has.
I'm bad at Vidja games.
Me too.
Well, Chris, thank you as always for covering this one for us. Before I let you go, has there been any new word on your RPG Maker extravaganza that you've been working on?
Well, right now is kind of the boring part, because all I'm doing is like setting tiles and arranging maps and like trying to figure out collision, like how to set collision details and events and such. So it's like right now I'm just putting the marrow in the bones of the skeleton of the game.
Gotcha.
So I'm sure I'll have something more interesting to report soon. But right now, yeah, I'm just kind of like slowly but surely learning how to build this whole thing. So
you've had it for, what, about a month and a half, almost 2 months now?
Yeah, but I've not worked on it every day like I probably
True.
Should.
Has your verdict on the game changed at all in your time with it?
Oh, no, it's still good. And they just came out with an update. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I'm sure that means that there's other packs that you can buy and things like that. So I know they're definitely still, you know, they're definitely still on top of it.
Still supporting it, still putting stuff out.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Well, hopefully soon we'll be able to get a, I don't know, I guess a final verdict. You kind of gave it the official score first time you talked about it. I like hearing updates on it. I'm so interested in what you're doing with this and how things are going and progressing and all that other jazz.
Yeah, maybe I'll do like a progress log or something like that. Pictures up and everything. That might be fun.
That'd be neat. Good stuff. Like, well, Chris, again, thanks as always for joining. Any final words to sum up your review?
This story is happy end.
Next game to talk about is called Severed, developed and published by Drinkbox Studios. It released August 8th on Nintendo Switch for $14.99, previously available on the Vita and the 3DS. Take control of a one-armed warrior named Sasha, wielding a living sword on her journey through a nightmare world in search of her family. Swipe-based touch controls will let you solve puzzles, find secrets, and do battle with a host of disturbing monsters. As the journey goes on, you'll unlock new abilities, ascend an RPG-style upgrade tree, and tease apart the mysteries of the dark fantasy universe Sasha finds herself in. We have our good friend Henry Jones covering this one. Henry, how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. We've got eclipse fever down here because Nebraska's in the totality.
Oh yeah, you're area. In the danger zone.
The danger zone where our eyes will actually fry out if we look at them without special glasses. So all of the special glasses are selling out. Nebraska has had a 20% increase in total population of the entire state.
Holy shit.
Yeah, hotels are going for $400 a night and just all sorts of fun things. So it's what it means for me is I have a harder time making a left turn.
I, like, really, really, really kind of want to see what it's like to look at the eclipse.
Yeah.
I know it'll, like, blind me, and I'll probably die or my head will explode or something, but...
Yeah.
I just kind of want to look.
Anyway, back to video games.
Yeah, the best part is, like, this will be heard after the eclipse, so we don't know whether or not I looked. Who will find out this week?
Stay tuned.
So yeah, tell us about Severed. What's up?
Well, Tim Activist got sundered. I got severed. Somebody is getting skewed soon. Anyway, the game is, as you said, you're this one-armed warrior. You wake up without an arm and your family's missing. And there are these crows that, you know, are talking to you. And then there's this guy who wears a cape and his face is entirely made out of a mouth who tells you you got to go find your family and you have a sword and then you just go off into the wilderness and you eventually find some dungeons and some towers and yet it's a 3D dungeon. Thankfully, it's not very complicated and you get a map that's easily available because back in the 90s, I could never get through a 3D dungeon game, no matter what it was. But this is pretty simple. You just go through. There are flames that indicate there are enemies, and then you go into the flame, and then you fight enemies, which usually have multiple limbs or a bunch of eyes, and you attack them. And there's these little charts that at the bottom that tell you when they're going to attack, and it's... The meter fills up and you can either swipe at them to keep them from attacking or you can wait. Some of them you have to wait for them to attack and then you have to swipe the limb. And then eventually you defeat them and you have this focus meter that tells you as you do like hit combos, it fills up. And once you beat them, you go into slow motion and you can actually slice off their limbs or their eyeballs or whatever. And then you gather them for experience, which allows you to... increase your defense, increase how many hit points it takes to attack, or more time to like sever limbs and then gather more stuff to build experience. So you have a wide choice of how you can approach this. I would recommend getting increased time to sever limbs and get more items because once you start, you feel like you suck at the game because it's like, okay, here's your opportunity to slash. Oh, it's gone. You're not going to get any experience off of this. So it's one of those games where it feels like you start off that you suck at it, but you're supposed to start off that you suck at this because you're not experienced enough. You can't do enough damage. You can't – if you get hit, you really get hit. So you have to build up your defense. You have to build up your attack. And then you start feeling like a badass, and then you get to areas of the game where they try to make it more difficult, like there are five enemies on the screen, and you have to fight them all at once. Or you go into – paths that are actually monsters' bodies, and there's like digestive juices or something poisonous in them, and you have to fight. It's like a timer, so you have to fight the monsters inside the monster you're already in, and you have to beat it quickly, and then you have to get out of there as quickly as you can to get to the other side of the monster.
Which was fun as hell, I thought. I covered this one back on the Vita when the game first released, and I really enjoyed it. What were your thoughts on it?
I like it. It's pretty good for what it is. It's a little simplistic because you are essentially doing the same things over and over again, and as you go through the game, it gets a little more tedious. Like, when you're surrounded by six of the same enemy, and they do the same thing, and you're just like, okay, swipe, 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 swipe. Your arm gets tired, and you get too tired of it because you're not quite strong enough to, like, just smack them down yet. So it get a little tiresome, and but what I personally like is I like little details and little things, like when you discover little books, like, that tell you, give you hints at what's going on, like exploration like that. This one isn't so much that. It is you're going through, you're trying to open doors, you're trying to figure out where the switch is to open this door, you're trying to figure out where the secret passage is, how you access the secret passages, and you're trying to get the items that allow you to open other passages so you can find secret areas here, secret areas there, and find this thing to increase you. Eat hearts to increase your life, and it's like you have five heart containers like in Zelda, except at the end you eat the heart, and you can do that with magic, which is brains. So it certainly has a little bit of more of a grotesque style. I was surprised the people who made this were Canadian, because this definitely felt like this could have been made by a Spanish people or South America, because it had a certain different feel to it. Like, this did not feel like a kind of horror we're accustomed to, because the creatures are a little different, because it's crows and their heads are mostly like giant teeth and mouths, and they talk a little differently, but it's made by Canadians, so.
Yeah, and the same crazy Canadians that made Guacamelee, so.
Oh yeah, Guacamelee. I remember that too. They definitely have a Spanish flair, even though they're from they're from America's hat and not America's beard.
Womp womp. Oh man. So for $15, what kind of verdict would you give this one?
I'd say it's a definite try it. It's certainly not the most expansive thing in what you can do. It's a lot of doing the same thing over and over again. The atmosphere is very nice. I wish there was a little bit more plot pushing you forward instead of, oh, that crow you said is going to this island. I have to go to that island. And then, oh, there is this castle in the way. If it had been a little bit more plot-oriented, or I'm very much used to the Silent Hill kind of horror where they throw in like little bits of story in, but I understand this is a much smaller ambition game, and it's not as, you know, as much time or as much, you know, resources to be able to focus on things, and you just have to get to the basic experience. But it's a definite try it. It works. If you have problems with touch controls, you know, it can be a little bit problematic, because when you have to block and when you have to slash things, it can be a little imprecise, but the atmosphere is very good. The gameplay is very solid, and the experience evolves enough to where it doesn't feel tedious. There are only a few times where you just get tired out by it, and it's just like, I need to take a break from this, and there's plenty of auto saving, so you can take a break from it like fairly quickly if you just want to set it down, give your wrist a break.
Yeah, I do appreciate the fact that they're kind of sticking to their convictions with this game, where it came out as a touchscreen game on the Vita, and then it was on also on the Wii U and the 3DS, and now on the Switch. So it's not like they're compromising the game and changing the game to put it on as many platforms as they can. And I appreciate that. They're not changing things up just for more sales. They're just putting it where it works.
Yeah, not like Silent Hill Shattered Memories, where, yeah, we made the Wii U version, and it's really great on the Wii version, even though some people complain. I mean, it is a the controls are sometimes wonky, but then they had to make the PlayStation 2 version to, you know, satisfy the people. I don't want to play a Wii game. I look stupid. This is stupid. You're stupid. But I do like these different experiences, and it is fun. And I wish I had a little bit more from the experience, but from what we have, it's fine.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for covering this one. Do you have any final words to sum it up?
Not really. This is a pretty cut and dry title. Good atmosphere. The game itself is fun, and the sound's good. It just needs a little bit more of the experience, but other than that, solid.
All right, next up, we have a handful of PS4 games to talk about, and we're bringing in our good friend Tim Ekibis. How are you doing today, sir?
Good.
How's your weekend?
Busy. So far, so busy.
What you doing?
Well, just yesterday, I had a bunch of people over at my house, X-Strike folks, for those who know that dark piece of my past. So he had people over at my house, and I don't know. It was just exhausting. I don't know. Played a lot of games yesterday. in that time, and subjected people to some wrestling, some good, some bad.
What was wrestling?
I made them watch The House of Horrors.
Oh my god, why?
Because it's hilarious.
Oh my god, that was so bad.
yeah.
How did Bray get back before Randy? Like, Randy stole the car, so what's going on?
Oh, it's because they taped it earlier in the week. That's how. I figured it out.
Yeah, I guess that'll do it. Since it wasn't it like daytime at the arena, and then they cut to the house and it's pitch black.
Yeah.
Editing.
Well, and the house is also in St. Louis, so there's also that.
True. Always fun. Didn't they like find that on Google Maps? They found the house.
Yeah. People looked up. Well, you can clearly see the house number when Bray's leaving at the end.
People are insane that they're like, oh wow, I found a house number. I'm finding this house.
Oh yeah,
and it happened.
That's people for you.
Yay, insanity! But we should probably talk about some games. And the first one that you're here to talk about is called Defenders of Ekron, developed and published by In Vitro Games. It released August 15th on PS4 and Steam for $14.99. Defenders of Ekron fuses shmup action and the exploration of an adventure game. Destroy enemies in 360-degree shooting range. Analyze unique scenarios. Upgrade your Anakim's skills and defeat the renegades to stop the bursting civil war threatening Ekron. The revolution starts within. Tim, how'd the revolution go?
I think the rebels are going to win this one. Perhaps. All right. So yeah, this from the description you read, this game has a great premise at hand, which is they're going to take like what plays out is like a twin stick shooter game, and they are going to, you know, kind of mash in some more adventure game like RPG exploration elements, which is a great idea. I was totally good for this. And the tutorial, it's a tutorial. It's showing you kind of how it's this trial that, you know, your character as a pilot has to go through to like earn his stripes of Ekron or whatever.
His pilot's license.
Yeah, basically to kind of graduate from training. And they put you in the scenario where they focus on like one ability of your ship at a time. And they send you through kind of like these neat puzzle rooms. It's like, okay, you have to figure out how to use how to reflect your lasers around in this room in order to get through it. And you have to figure out how to use your shield to reflect things. There's some reflection going on. But yeah, use your shield to get through these rooms and time the usage of it properly. And do like clever things with this kind of lock-on charge attack. Because like when you have a lock-on attack, and when you lock on the enemy, it drops like an energy ball, but it doesn't fire until you release the button. So it's a thing where in the tutorial you'll drop one of those, and then because it needs to hit a switch to open a door, so you need to drop that thing. And then get by the door so that when it hits it, then you can go out the door. So that kind of thing. Or if like you set it up so it's out there, and then when an enemy drops its defenses, then you can, let the thing fly and it hits them.
Kind of like a remote detonation kind of deal.
Yeah, sort of thing. Because then, it just flies at them. And that's cool. So that was a really cool area and really started to... It like almost like a Zelda-esque take on the twin stick shooter. And you had these discrete rooms, you had to figure things out, and then da 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 da. And then I got like into the levels of the game.
oh no.
which were, well, it's like, so the first level basically plays like your standard shooter level. And that you're just kind of flying through, shooting enemies, you get to a base, you have to kill a bunch of turrets around there, and then you fight a boss, and then that's it. The second level, you're out in this desert, and you're flying around, having to scan these data points to find something that eventually opens up an entrance to something underground. And I'm just like... The thing is, like, in general, like, once I was out playing these levels... Like, kind of the cleverness and the tight design of those first, like, that tutorial was gone, and it was just kind of this slow floating around. Like, I didn't feel quite fast enough or powerful enough. I mean, like, your ship upgrades.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do get stronger as the game goes on, but just, like... At the starting point, and even after I had done a couple upgrades, I just like the ship just felt so sluggish to me and not snappy at all. Which, you know, slower, more adventure-y pace, right? Yeah. But then, you know, I'm still playing a shooter, and I want to still have the satisfaction of playing this shooter, and I'm not getting that satisfaction just because of how kind of slow. Like, and not agile my ship is, like, your shots don't come out very fast. And it just didn't feel great generally, while I was trying to fly around and shoot things. And especially like in the desert, like I was just so bored flying around this big expansive desert and just like,
Do you think it's a case of like, they're trying to ease you into the game, but they like started way too slow?
Yeah, or, like, I don't know if maybe just, like, mechanically they just need to speed things up with your ship. Because, like, sometimes, it just feels like things are too tight on the screen. And, like, there's, in that desert, like, there's these tank enemies that have these lasers. And they just have this way of, like, getting right up on top of you. It's a short-range laser, but they get in there on you. And that thing just fries you so fast. And it just felt more frustrating than like I was doing something wrong. Just like I felt like my ship should be moving faster, or I should be shooting faster, or something to like just speed this up. But instead, I kind of get this slow death as I'm like my pea shooter's going like pew 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 with this tank, and it's just kind of closing in on me, and eventually just zapping me with a laser. And you know, I wouldn't die, but it does a lot of health. But they also have. So as you go around levels, you kill enemies, you're collecting, I don't remember what the in-universe term is, but you're collecting experience. And once you fill up like an experience pod, you get one. I have one pod, and you can spend, once you finish a level, you can spend your collected energy on upgrades. But during a level, you may need to use those energy pods to heal yourself. Which they don't explain. So I can see how they want to create kind of this push and pull. Like, you have to make, you know, some tactical decisions. Like, do I want to, you know, try to make it through here with this low health? Or, you know, do I just need to bite the bullet and blow one of my, you know, one of my stocks, one of my what would be experience on just getting, you know.
So it's like a choice between health and experience.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that's what I'm.
Interesting mechanic.
Yeah, yeah. They don't explain this at all. So, like, I kept playing through the first level and just, like, I made it to the that bit where you're like, you're flying around, you're shooting the turrets, but I had super low health, but I managed to get through it. And then I'm fighting the boss and I still have super low health. And I'm just like, how can I can't get through this. I don't have any health. Like, what the heck? So I went and, like, played the level again from the start. And at that point, you know, I incidentally pushed the button, which is L1 to do the healing. And then I healed myself up and I saw what happened. I'm like, oh, because they don't explain that at all. And it's kind of important because it's the only way to heal your ship mid-mission. And it seems like unless you're excellent, you're certainly going to need to do that mid-mission for sure, 100%.
Is it mentioned, like, in the settings with the controls or anything that's just tucked away?
No, I went into the options, like, because there was one point where I was, like, a few days since I had played the game. Like, I played it some last weekend, and then there was kind of the week, and then I picked it up again. And I'm like, I don't remember I didn't remember how to put up my shield, which you have to pull both L2 and R2 to do. So it wasn't, like, set to a button, which is why I wasn't finding it. But I was going into the menus trying to find, like, a layout of the controls, and it just wasn't there. Like, there's no place to reassign buttons either, which I know is a detriment to people that, you know, might have some kind of physical challenges in using a controller. But, yeah, that sucked. and they don't explain that. And your ship has your ammo will run down, but it recharges if you don't shoot for a few seconds. So you can also, I found out, blow one of your kind of experience stocks on instantly refilling your ammunition, or at least refilling it faster without having to wait. Which happened accidentally because I hit the wrong button. And then I was just like, well, shit, I just blew an experience stock for no reason on that there. That sucks.
It does sound like cool mechanics. It just seems like it could have been tuned a bit more to be a bit more fast-paced and maybe a bit more informative with the options in the game.
That, certainly, yes. Definitely, that could have been explained.
So it sounds like this game could get, like, a patch or two and easily fix these problems.
I don't know about easily, but it could
realistically fix the problems.
It could be improved. Let's say that, perhaps. But, you know, I don't know what's speeding up your ship or, you know, how involved that would be. Or, like, some of it might just be kind of ingrained in the, you know, the mechanics of how the game was built. I will also say I was playing through this, you know, in the second level, and I had points at which, like, you'd when you scan, like, one of these objects, like, it would kind of be above, like, a hangar, and then the hangar would open up and, like, ships would come out. And at a certain point later on, like, four ships are popping out. And when this was happening, like, the frame rate was dropping, like, dramatically, like, through the ground. It got really shitty. Yeah, so there's definitely, like, some technical problems that need to be ironed out at the same time. Like, it was really hard to play at that point. And when it happened, I turned off the game and didn't come back to it for a bit. It was so frustrating. I'm just like, what the hell is going on here? This is ridiculous. It just, so there's some just kind of optimization that needs to happen there as well.
Well, hopefully they're addressing that stuff. For all we know, they could already be working on a patch to take care of this stuff. But for $15, what's your verdict on this one?
Nah. Well, at least wait and see what goes on with it. But in its current state, I would, I think people should take a pass on it.
Sounds good. So if things change and if there's any kind of updates or patches that come out for it, we'll try to keep everyone updated. But the other game you're here to talk about is called Nidhogg 2, developed and published by Messhoff. Released August 15th as well on PS4 and Steam for $14.99. The rules are simple. Reach the other side and kill anyone that stands in your way. Deftly parry and rend their throats, riddle their bowels with arrows, or squish their brains between your toes. The worm cares not for chivalry. Tim, what'd you think of this one?
Okay, so if you like Nidhogg 1, you will probably like Nidhogg 2. it's just, you know, straight up, it is an upgrade of Nidhogg. When this game was first announced and screenshots were shown, I think myself and a lot of people were a bit taken aback by the visual style they chose to go with, which was very kind of weird and cartoony. Like, the first Nidhogg is very minimalist. Almost looks like, you know, it's
like a straight up Coleco game.
Yeah, it looks like an Atari, like, Coleco game, you know, better animations, like some more detail, blah blah blah, but, you know, at its heart, yeah, that's what it looks like. So this was a big departure from that, certainly. But
this one looks significantly different.
Yeah, in the final product, like, it works, like, perfectly. Like, once you are in there playing the game, you see it in motion, like, it works great. Like, the backgrounds are so detailed, and it has a really goofy, kind of cartoony vibe to it that just really works for the action. Because it's kind of silly. Like, Nidhogg is kind of silly. It's an intense, competitive experience in trying to duel your way from one end of a level to the other, but it's like just dumb shit happens in this game. And it just lends itself actually really well. So the visuals are great. That was a great move. As far as modes go, there is a single player arcade mode, which basically you just kind of play through every level. And it gives you your time at the end of it. That's how it scores you. And at the end, you kind of see the leaderboards of how you stacked up against everybody. On my first run, I got through it in 26 minutes. The current record holder was like 8 or 9 minutes. So,
oh, wow.
I got some improving to do for sure. But
step your game up.
I have got to step my game up. But yeah, that's all it is. It's just kind of basically a time trial. How fast can you gun your way through 10 levels? And beyond that, you know, there's online multiplayer. So for as long as there are people playing this game online, you should be able to find some matches. But, you know, the heart of this game is in a room full of people, a couch multiplayer competitive experience, where you can yell at each other and you have a room full of people yelling at the screen and reacting to what's going on. That is where the heart of this game was in the original and still is in this one. So yeah, yesterday I had people over to my house. I had a room full of people. And it was the ideal situation for playing Nidhogg. And the great thing about it is it's simple enough that, like, people who don't play games can pick up the controller and have fun with it and possibly even win, you know, win a few matches just to, depending on how things go. But yeah, it's not something like, you know, Street Fighter or Guilty Gear, other things we played yesterday where you put the controller in the hands of a novice and they're just going to be like,
And just get their ass kicked and be like, yeah, never mind. I'll let you guys play.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe some other time. That would be great. Perhaps. But, yeah.
It sounds like more of the same of the first game, but better in pretty much every way.
Yeah, well, there's more stages. They also added in more weapon types. So along with just your fencing sword, you also have, like, a two-handed broadsword. You have a dagger, you have a bow and arrow, which sounds like it would be total BS, but you can, like, parry arrows directly back at the person who shoots them, so it's not quite that simple. When you're setting up matches, you have the option for setting up time limits, for setting up what weapons you want to be in the match, so it's like you could turn off bow and arrow if you wanted to. Like, no problem.
Yeah.
You could... Yeah, there's a low gravity mode, so all your jumps go super high. There's a bunch of toggles in there for turning things on and off. You can turn off the like dive kicks. You can turn off like slide kicks. You'd have it just be hand to hand. There's a lot of ways to play with the options to change things up and speed things along if necessary. Because if you're playing without a time limit, sometimes matches can go for quite a while, just like with this push and pull back and forth. And I think that about covers it.
I hear the soundtrack's really good too.
Yes. Some really, I heard one person there compared it like to being like one of a couple of the tracks of being reminiscent of Katamari, just in kind of this relaxed way in the background. So yeah, it's got a good soundtrack. Katamari's a hell of a game to invoke, I guess you could say, with his terms of sound though. But yeah, it's a great game overall.
Cool. So for $15, what's your verdict?
Yeah, well, the caveat is if you don't have people to play it with locally, you're not going to have the best experience. But if you do, you totally should have it for your next party. For someone who's just going to play solo, you might want to wait on it just because you might not get that much out of it. But it's a great game to play with other people. And you know, if the multiplayer community thrives and keeps getting updates, maybe, you know, it'll be something to hang on to and keep dropping back into.
Maybe. I would love to see them bring this to the Switch.
Yeah.
It seems like a game would be perfect on the Switch.
Yeah, you just break off the... I feel like every week where they're like, they should put more games on the Switch. Every game would be great on the Switch, right?
It really would. The more the better, in my eyes.
But no, absolutely. You break those Joy-Cons off, like, you could play this game anywhere. Like, you don't... Yeah, it would be great on the Switch, because I'm trying to think, as we're playing it, we're playing with, you know, PlayStation controllers, but I think sometimes I don't think whether I'm using an analog stick or a D-pad anymore.
Yeah, you just do it.
I was using, yeah. But yeah, I think it would play fine on an analog.
Nice. And if people out there are going the Steam route, they also have a bundle for $20 that includes the soundtrack.
Ooh.
So that might be worth grabbing as well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for covering those, but I know there was one more game you wanted to talk about today.
Yes.
Not part of our normally scheduled programming.
Off the
script. Just fucking, we're going to shoot from the hip, brother.
Yeah.
So what'd you want to talk about?
So I wanted to talk about Ninja Theory's Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, which came out a couple weeks ago.
August 8th on PS4 and Steam for $29.99.
Oh, it's not on Xbox? That's a shame.
I know, especially because it's published by Ninja Theory, so it's just an in-house game. Maybe it'll show up eventually.
Yeah, maybe there's some kind of like behind-the-scenes exclusivity holding it up.
We'll either see something in 6 months or a year, or yeah. Not at all. That's the way I look at it.
Possibly. Yeah, so, picked up this game kind of as a birthday treat to myself. I've enjoyed Ninja Theory's past work. This game is so freaking cool. So it's about this woman. This takes place, you know, kind of, you know, centuries ago in like northern, like Scotland area. With this woman, Senua, who is venturing into the mythical Norse realm of Helheim to try to save her beloved soul by, I don't know, some means.
Helheim, that sounds like a very inviting location.
Yeah, it's very, very deep in Norse mythology. And there's like these lore stones around the game that kind of give you background of the areas that you're going through. And so the game, like one of the first things that's going to strike you is during the opening credits, one of the first positions credited is the mental health advisor, which is, I guess, perhaps slightly eye-rolly to be like, oh, okay, well, I see where this game is kind of going with itself. But to, you know, not be cynical, it is a game that at least tries to approach, deal with, address like the mental conditions of the main character. And like you're constantly hearing voices in your head. Like, sound is very important to this game. It's not something to play on mute. There's a lot of detail to be heard.
Bust out the headphones for this one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like, God, I'm like trying to play it in my living room. And like my wife kept asking me to turn it down because she thought it was a bit too loud. I'm just like, because when you get into combat, you know, things kind of swell. But it's just like, you got to hear what's going on. There's so much going on in the audio soundscape. But so the gameplay, if you're familiar with Ninja Theory's past games, which are very action heavy, like Heavenly Sword, that early PS3 game, you know, Enslaved Odyssey to the West, Devil May Cry, which is the most character action of character action games. This game is not like those. Get that right out of your head. The action is much more slower and deliberate, and actually kind of more of a backseat to, if you want to use the somewhat derogatory term, walking simulator. It's slightly more akin to that, and that you're exploring these environments. There's like simple puzzles to solve, but there's just like a lot of storytelling going on along the way.
I still like the term walk exploration.
I mean, I like the term walking simulator in the terms of like, you know what they're talking about. I just don't like it in the sense of like, well, this is less valid as a game, because I don't particularly agree with that sentiment. But anyways, yeah, like the entire second act of the game, you don't have a sword. You're trying to get another sword. So it's all like exploration, puzzles, mazes, things to figure out. And then, you know, at the end, when you do get another sword, there is a very lengthy combat encounter in a graphically stunning area called the Sea of Corpses. Ninja Theory showed, for me, especially with Devil May Cry, that they have like this insane level of visual creativity and detail with their games that just like, for whatever you think of them, like no other company does. If you've played Devil May Cry, you know, like there's this one spot where you're like underneath a river, like upside down. That's really cool. There's like a part in that game where it's overlaying your infiltration of this building with like a sketched out outline as if it was being done on like on a chalkboard. and there is just like some great stuff in that vein in this game as well. The combat is, I like it. it's not like, fast paced, like your standard action game. It has a much more deliberate pace to it in kind of, cause she's wielding like a two-handed sword. So your swings are generally a lot slower.
Would you put it in like the Dark Souls kind of territory?
Yeah, kind of more so. There isn't like a huge move set, but there is slightly more nuance to it than you might think early on, where it's just kind of like, okay, well, slash, you know, dodge or counter, go back in, slash some more. I noticed like some other moves coming out in my combos, like depending on how I timed them and mixed up my heavy or light strikes, and there's a kick as well, which you need to knock shields out of the way later on. But the things ramp up in that department as they throw more enemies at you. You know, towards the end of the game, you have like four or five of these huge barbarian dudes stalking you down with different weapons and stuff like that. So it gets really intense, and you got to watch out for it. But kind of one of the things that's made the most news about this game is how it has permadeath in it.
I've heard about that. I've heard that it's there and that it's not there.
So it is there. I didn't experience it myself, but I did some research into it. Like, there was an article today that came out that said, oh, the threat of permadeath in this game is, you know, it's all a lie. No, that's not the case. It's just not. So the testing that I don't remember what publication that did it. The testing they did is they just sat there and they died over and over and over again on like one part. But the game is designed such that if like you're stuck on a part like that, it's not going to let you die out and, you know, and that's that. That's not going to be the case. It's, you know, you if you die like a lot over the course of the game, then you're going to be under threat of having things cut off and having to start over.
Mm.
But it is there. But it, you know, I don't think the game is so hard that I think many people will run into that. But it definitely is a motivating factor when you're playing and you're like, you know, when you die, it's just like, oh shit, oh shit. Because she has like this dark mark on her arm, and like the more you die, the more it kind of crawls up to her head. And if it reaches her head, that means you die. And not every not every time you die does it get bigger, but on those occasions when you do die and you do see it noticeably move up your arm, you're like, oh shit, that's not good. And it definitely ratchets up the intensity of the game. Overall.
That's an interesting spin, though, where it's not how many times you die specifically, it's how many different times you die.
Yeah. It's not just as simple as like, oh, you died a bunch, so fuck you. But that, you know, that kind of level of leniency means that if you do get stuck on a part, and there's times when I died like a couple times trying to figure out exactly what I needed to do. So I'm glad if there's something that just completely evades people that it it's not going to give them the ultimate. They're not going to pay the ultimate price for it. There was actually a glitch in the game that happened later on in the game where you could get checkpointed in a position where you just keep dying over and over and over again.
Oh, God.
I believe this happened to Jim Sterling, and but they patched it this past week, so that's gone. So that's good. They're paying attention to stuff like that. But, yeah, overall, like, it was one of my favorite games of the year, and I think people should definitely check it out, but it's not going to be for everybody. It's a little bit on the artsy side, which, you know, I have a penchant for games that you kind of what do I want to say, like, just really like push the way that like gameplay and narrative are integrated with each other. So this game is something that was just like right up my alley.
Nice. I hear a lot of people say this isn't just a game, it's an experience.
Yeah. And yeah, I hate to overhype it. I hate to sound like, you know, I don't know, some high artsy fartsy, you know, kind of person, but yeah, it's really something else to check out.
I've seen your movies, Tim. You have too much cursing to be artsy fartsy.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, man. Well, Tim, thank you so much for coming on and reviewing the two games and talking about Hellblade as well. I think that may have convinced me to buy it myself. I've kind of been on the fence with it, and given how little I play my PlayStation anymore, but I might have to just go for it and grab it.
Yeah, I think definitely. Like, for me, like, they could have charged more for this game, and I would have been happy. But 30 is probably about the right
ideas. Price. Don't give them ideas.
30 is about the right price. Like, this game is, you know, kind of a mini AAA game. Like, this is some of the best visuals I've seen in a game, like, period. Like, full stop.
It's AAA, but in, like, 8-point font.
Yeah, but, yeah, like, the level of production quality is AAA. But with like a more indie kind of, you know, vibe to it.
Nice. sounds good. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to grab it myself. But again, thank you so much for coming on and chatting. We are going to have to move on and cover some other games. Do you have any final words to sum it all up?
All of it. Jeez, that's like a man
putting you on the spot, man. That's what I do.
All of it. Yeah. No. Of all I've played, like get Nidhogg if you've got the friends. Get Hellblade for something awesome to play by yourself, and maybe don't check out Ekron just yet. Not Defenders of Enron, like I kept calling it. It's Ekron.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Minor Meltdown, developed and published by Mighty Pebble Games. It released August 2nd on Steam for $6.99. Minor Meltdown is an action-packed, team-based multiplayer game. Scout the map for minerals, upgrade your gear, and attempt to blow up the opposing team, all the while avoiding monsters, traps, and environmental pitfalls along the way. We have our friend Tom Miller covering this one. Tom, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Today was the day of the eclipse, so everybody's talking about that. And I can still see, so I think I made it out all right.
Indeed. I tried checking it out, but I couldn't find any glasses, and I tried doing like the pinhole in the cardboard thing, and that really wasn't doing anything for me, so I just went back inside and fucking jumped on Reddit.
Hey, you know, do what you can. I was not expecting anything, but I don't know. There were a bunch of people like sitting out in my neighborhood and stuff, so it was pretty cool.
How'd it look out your way?
It looked, it looked pretty cool. It wasn't a total eclipse here, but, you know, I borrowed some glasses and it's like, whoa, I can't see the whole sun. That's pretty awesome. but like, it makes all the shadows look really crazy and stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah, it was pretty neat.
It was cool. I'm glad I got to experience it at least partially.
I do have to take a second to appreciate what our listeners go through listening to this, where they jumped from earlier in the show how it was like tomorrow, and then earlier again it was yesterday, and now it's today, and they're going to be listening to tomorrow. Like,
you get to get the whole timeline.
Yeah, I can only wonder what people listen to, like, going through this episode, and nothing is in chronological order at all. Like, I don't even record this shit on the same day anymore. Like, some stuff was done on Saturday. Someone wrote an email from like a week and a half ago that I'm going to be reading, doing this today, talking to other people later tonight. It's fun, but that has nothing to do with the game. So
yeah, no, we kind of got off. So Minor Meltdown. Yeah. I've been having a lot of fun with this game. Like the full release just did happen the other day, and it's like, so when I first saw it, what it brought to mind, the first thing I thought of was Spelunky, which is like the roguelike, sort of a dungeon crawling mining game where you explore and, you know, get to do that. And like, both the style and the setting sort of reminded me of that, which kind of immediately drew me to it. And this game does have a very different flow to it, because it has, it's a 4-on-4 like squad-based competitive thing. So that you've got three different modes. You've got a straight death match. You've got a sort of a king of the hill type of thing, and then you've got one where you you get diamonds from killing enemies, and you try to capture as many of them as you can and take them to a center point. So even though the game is pretty simple in its mechanics, there are the different modes that make it more variable. The pixel graphics are really well done. I thought the character designs were charming and funny, and you have like some different types of enemies that are really well made too. Everything it seems just right as far as pixel art goes in that kind of a scenario. And you also have a lot of different weapons and items that you can play around with that actually do feel quite a bit different from another. You have like a sort of like a taser kind of thing, and you've got different guns and melee weapons and like grenades and like landmines that you can play. So you got a bunch of different ways that you can, you know, kill your enemies or the other, you know, bad guys that show up that are not player characters. So you have, a bunch of different ways, or three different ways. That's, well, it's a bunch. It's more than one. to play the game.
You have than one way.
You have more than one way. But I found it to be a really cool multiplayer experience. And the only thing I really had against it, it's not the game's fault, really. It's just not all that well known of a game right now. And hopefully this does a little something to remedy that. But like, you go into the lobby and it's kind of rare that you see other people in there.
Just an issue where it's like struggling to find its player base right now.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is, like, if a game has enough people to kind of like get some traction going, then it can kind of sustain itself. But if not, it's kind of like you go on and it's like, there's nobody online right now, so I guess I'll just whatever. And then it kind of loops in on itself. And I really hope that doesn't continue to happen, because this is a really fun game to play. And one of my favorite parts about it, actually, so you have a choice between a climbing rope and a jetpack to sort of increase your mobility. And if you use the rope, which I do almost every time, you can do like sort of like a Bionic Commando style, like swinging off of different ledges and stuff and making your way. Like, it has kind of a physics engine going on, so you can really, like, if you get the hang of it, move across the battlefield like way, way faster than you normally could. And it's really fun once you get the hang of it.
Kind of like those psychos out there who like perfected how to use the rope in Worms games.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead
exactly.
of just bouncing off a wall back and forth.
Yeah. Or Umihara Kawase is another game that uses sort of similar mechanics to that, which I'm a huge fan of that series too. So like, to be reminded of those kind of games is always fun. Let me see. It has a really catchy soundtrack. It has some... there's a lot of sort of chiptune-y stuff that complements the pixel art really well.
Nice.
The main lobby theme has like a la, 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 la. And the vocal part of that reminded me sort of unfortunately of the I Wanna Be a Hulkamaniac. It has almost the same melody, so I've been getting that stuck in my head repeatedly over the last few days. I don't know if that would be considered a positive or a negative, but
oh my Lord.
Let's see, the only real criticism I have of it is that aiming, doing the aiming stuff, especially with melee weapons, feels a little bit weird because you have the reticle on screen at all times. So it's kind of like, it gets a little confusing, but once you get used to that, it's fine. But one thing is, they do have a link to the Discord for the development team on the title screen of the game. And I posted a couple ideas for feature requests and bugs this morning. And like within an hour, the guy wrote back to me and, you know, commenting on it. So like the team is really engaged and obviously really working to polish the game. So it's cool. I think it's a really fun game, and I do hope it does find its base, because I can see having a lot of good times with it for sure.
Oh shit. I just looked up the soundtrack for the game. I can't find the soundtrack anywhere yet.
Yeah.
But it's from motherfucking Bob Baffy, one of our favorite guests on the show. Oh, Mr. Bob awesome. Baffy did the soundtrack. I'm going to have to drop him an email and get the soundtrack for this game.
And be hey, Mr. Baffy. I wanted to look that up. I'm sorry that I don't know his work, but I'm going to have to check it out because I really like the work that he did for it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to hit him up. He also did, like, the music and the narration, the voices and stuff in iDarb on the Xbox and on Windows. Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. And it has, like, sort of, similar, like, fast-paced multiplayer thing going on, too.
And he's been on the show multiple times over our history. He's been on a bunch.
Very cool.
I'm going to play some Bob Baffy music this episode. Fuck it. That's my decision. This episode is going to be some Bob Baffy because
sounds
he's
like
awesome. And I'm hoping I can get some Minor Meltdown music for him. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm like, this game went from, oh, this looks pretty cool, to Bob Baffy did the music. I need to buy this fucking game.
Yeah.
So yeah, for $6.99, it's a fairly cheap game. What's your verdict on this one?
I'd say go for it if you're looking for a fun, like, fast-paced multiplayer game, and especially if you have some other people you might be able to play it with. It's going to be a great party game, or just, I don't know, it's just got a lot of fun stuff going on, and I think it's worth it, personally.
Nice. Yeah, I'm probably going to wish list this one. I have no idea if they're planning to bring it to any other platform or not. I'm going to have to find out some more info about this one. Seeing Bob Baffy just immediately triggers my desire to learn more and more about this.
But right on.
Tom, thank you as always for covering this game for us, and I'm sure we'll have you back on again soon. Any final words to wrap up the review?
Not too much. I'm going to be at MagWest this coming weekend, so if you run into an awkward bald guy there, of which I'm sure there will be several thousand, but if you see me personally, you know, feel free to say hi. I'm the one with glasses.
Again, you're not narrowing it down. All right, finally tonight we have a handful of Switch games to talk about, and when we're talking Switch anymore, we're bringing in our good friend Norg. Norg, how the hell are you doing today, sir?
Great, man!
Is that legal on this show?
Actually, it was just iced tea, but yeah.
Sure it was.
Oh, wow, man, yeah. Acapulco Gold, Maui Wowie.
113 episodes, man, 113, and then that's what we're doing.
Balls.
You just love balls, don't you?
I do. There's just something about spheres that really gets me going.
Tell me about your favorite balls, George.
Well, let me think. I prefer them clean shaven, typically. Ooh. And not too big, not too small, kind of medium sized.
Well, mine are big, huge, so I guess I'm out.
Ah, crap. All right, let's talk about games.
Cool. We have a handful of Switch games to talk about. I know you're gonna cover one of them. I got two to talk. What the fuck? I can't talk when you're gargling. Stop gargling balls. Too many balls, man. Just like one at a time. Suckle them, don't gargle. First game to talk about with you tonight is Cubic's Paint, developed and published by AB Light Studios. It released July 27th on the Switch for $4.99. Unleash your inner artist with Cubic's Paint. Sculpt and paint 3D figurines with your fingertips using the touchscreen. In Cubic's Paint, you'll become a sort of Michelangelo, sculpting digitally with your fingers to free the cubics hiding within the block. Then get your artistic mojo flowing by painting them. Use maker mode to sculpt and freestyle your own, or let your imagination run wild, editing those you've already unlocked. Plus, they have an image mode to take pictures of the cubics. Basically, this is, for the most part, like a sculptor simulator, where you'll have a gigantic block of white cubes, and you'll tap on the screen to chip away all the excess blocks, and once you start seeing blue underneath, that's the figure that you're trying to get to. You just tap away at all the white cubes to get them to fly off. If you tap on the actual blue figurine too many times, it starts changing color, and it drops your star rating. I think you could tap on the figure like 4 times before it drops you down to a 2-star, and then down to a 1-star, and then you just lose, and you got to start over.
Just give it a little tappy, a little tap-a-roo.
For the most part, yeah. There are a couple of hitches with it, in that there's some things that, like, a lot of them are animals that have legs. And, of course, when you have legs, there's gaps in between. So you'll be tapping under there, and there will be... Yeah. Just say balls if you need to.
I'm sorry. As soon as I thought I heard you say pubic's taint, then I stopped listening.
When did I say that?
That's what I thought I heard you say when you announced the name of the game.
Cubics. paint.
Oh.
Good Lord, man.
not pubic taint?
No, but the taint areas of a lot of the animals are where the problems come into play. Honestly, because, you know, you'll have the underbelly of an animal and there will be the white cubes at the bottom that you have to tap off. The problem is, like, you're able to rotate the thing and you can rotate it to look down from above to whatever you're trying to unlock and tap the white blocks away. But you can't look from the bottom. So any of the white blocks that are stuck under there, you have to, like, tilt it perfectly and zoom out just the right amount and hope to God that when you tap, you actually hit the blocks instead of the figure and fuck up your star rating. It would be easier if, like, when you zoom in, if you can move the object up and down instead of just zooming in and out and rotating around it. It's just when you're getting near the end, there were a couple of the ones that I just gave up on because there were like three or four blocks underneath that I couldn't tap. They were just tucked in the worst place imaginable, and you just couldn't rotate the camera to the proper spot to get it. Once you tap all the blocks away, you have an opportunity to paint it. They'll have a little picture in the corner showing what colors everything normally are, and then you have a color palette and you just draw on it and paint it with your finger, and then you can do the freestyle. It's not really a game. It's kind of just like a dick around kind of thing, really. You have such a filthy mind, Norg.
I'm 12 tonight.
Are you sure that was tea that was bubbling before?
Yeah.
For $5, it's enjoyable. It's a nice time killer. This might be something that Kira might enjoy, where, you know, you just hand her the console and be like, here, tap away, and then look for the dog or the elephant or the octopus or, you know, whatever. They have a bunch of different categories of things you could tap away. Animals, I think there were like stop signs and basketball hoops and shit like that. It's not going to be something that you're going to spend a ton of time on, but I could imagine, but it's cheap enough that fuck it. You might as well pick it up. It's entertaining. It's a time killer. I would love to see them update it so that you could either rotate to the bottom and look at the sculpture from below, or at least move the camera up, down, left, and right instead of just zooming and rotating.
So it sounds pretty firmly like a fuck it, why not?
Yeah, fuck it. Pretty much.
So fuck the pubic taint.
God. I hope they don't listen to this and get pissed. It's pubic paint, damn it.
Joe Cam takes no responsibility for the childishness of his guests.
But I do take full responsibility for the childishness of myself.
Taint.
Anyway, moving on, the next game to talk about is, I hope I'm saying this right, Gunbarich, developed
in Barrick.
Barrick Barish. Developed and published by Zero Dude.
Barish. Barish. Bunghole.
Settle down, Beavis.
Yeah, no way, shut up.
Anyway. Anyway, developed and published by Zero Div, it released August 3rd on the Switch for $7.99. Play the good old game. Gunbarich launched an arcade version in 2001. It is a new game with elements of puzzle and shooting in the late works of Japanese brand Saikyo. In Japan's amusement arcade, there is always one popular game. That's their write-up. So,
wow.
Norg, what'd you think of this one?
Well, it definitely had that kind of arcade feel. It was like a combination of Breakout or Arkanoid and pinball in a way, because you've got your standard thing that moves at the bottom of the screen. By the way, the screen that you get is like, it's like a long form arcade screen. So it's vertical in your play field. And then on the either side, you have the two characters that you can play as, which have different capabilities in terms of movement and such. So you don't get an awful lot of game screen to play with as it is in this. The thing that moves at the bottom is typical to your kind of Arkanoid kind of thing, where you've got the thing and it knocks the ball back and forth, back and forth. The element that they add to this is the fact that when you hit the button, it has pinball flippers on it. So you can either just let the ball bounce up, bounce off of
son of a bitch, why did I let you cover this one?
You let me cover a game that has multiple balls. You can either let the ball bounce off of it naturally, like you would in... God damn it. Fuck. Ball bounce off of it naturally, like you would in any type of Arkanoid or Breakout game. Or you can knock it with the pinball flippers to smack it into all of the things that are up above. Now, you get different power-ups and different availabilities. There's a power-up that will launch the ball much faster. There is a power-up that will make the ball move in the direction of the paddle box, for lack of a better description. There's another power-up. I think I got the multiple balls one. There's the follow-up. There's the powerful one, which will make it move really fast. Then there's one where it knocks into something and then explodes and takes a whole bunch of things out. All of these are really useful in the variety of available levels that you'll encounter in this game, because not only do you have standard levels where you knock all the bricks out and sometimes you activate or deactivate obstacles, and periodically something will come out and try to stun your thing, and typically it's only going to stun your thing when you're when the ball is right about to get to the bottom. So, yeah, that's frustrating and unforgiving. But then you have boss levels who look really kind of horrifying and awesome all at the same time. So you're not just going from level to level to level to level knocking bricks. You're also knocking out bosses. There's a lot of really cool art and character development to it. The sound effects are very arcadey, and it's definitely an immersive experience in terms of that. It sounds good. It looks good. The only thing I would say is that it gets really old really fast, like most arcade games, I guess you could say.
Well, do you want to know the reason why? Because it's an arcade game.
That's true. They want you to spend more quarters or move on to the next machine.
By the way, I do want to put this out there that I believe this is the same engine as the ACA Neo Geo games. It has damn near identical menus and options, and like the dip switch options in at least in the Strikers game that we're going to cover in a little bit. But like, you're able to change the lives, how many continues you get. It feels very much like this is just another ACA Arcade Archives game, but without the branding. So I'm not sure if Hamster was involved and like licensed their engine to use this or what.
That's interesting. I should have dug into the options a little bit more, because
you know why you should have dug into the options?
Why?
Because you could change the screen.
Really?
To vertical orientation.
Son of a...
Yeah.
Balls.
You don't get a lot of real estate to play the game. Well, if you would have went into the menu and switched it sideways, you had to have the whole fucking screen to play.
Suck my dick, Joe Cam. Now, having said that, if there was an option in there that would make it so that you actually get more continues, that would have been kind of cool, because I think you cap out at it's okay, cool. So yeah, at its base level, you cap out at like either I think it's two or three continues, and then you're done. So. All right. I might have to give this one another shot just with some of the options, but the review that you're getting is basically of the baseline level of the game. You get it, you start it up, and you play it for... I probably put in a few hours into it.
It's quite addictive.
It is, but it's weird because I like it, and I played it a bunch, but I couldn't play it for any kind of long stretch of time because it would just get unforgivingly painful, and then I tell it to fuck off and then I'd go do something else. And I'm like, hey, I kind of want to play that again. And then I'd go back to it. I'd play for a few rounds and I'm like, fuck this. And then I'd go away. I'm like, God damn it. I think I want to play this game again. And I mean, I come back to it. It's just.
Yeah, it gets pretty difficult. I believe there's 7 or 8 worlds in the game. Each one has 2 stages and then a boss. The last one also has like a final boss as well. I think it's 7.
Damn.
But yeah, you're able to change.
They have 3 worlds. I'm sorry, they have that many worlds, but they have 3 stages inside each one. I think
you're able to switch it up to 9 lives, and you're able to give yourself up to unlimited continues. So
well, shit.
Next time you should go into the options and fuck around with things and switch the screen so that you can play it vertically.
Well, fuck me. Next time I'll do Magfest. Magfest.
Yeah, man.
Balls.
I was laying on the couch and I like propped it up on my chest, put a pillow behind it so it was just the screen vertically laying on me with a Joy-Con in each hand.
That's cool. I will have to try that.
Yeah, you will.
I will. God damn it. I will. And there's nothing you can do to stop me.
So for $8, what are your thoughts on this one?
Oh, $8. I'd say try it. I'm not sure you're getting your money's worth out of $8, but it's worth trying, especially if you're super hype on Arkanoid / pinball style games, or even just Arkanoid games. One last question. Does it give you the option to adjust the amount of time you have per level?
No.
Okay. That was another one of the more unforgiving aspects I found, was that there's not a lot of time in each level. So, which is challenging, and it's cool, except that when you get that one bloody block at the very end, and it even highlights it, and it points to it, and it says, last one! And you're like, I know, God, hit fucking, just get it, God, no! And then you run out of time. So that was slightly frustrating.
See, I was surprised because I routinely found that the ball would just magically always find its way to the last block.
You know, some levels did that, but most of the time for me, and again, this is me, and I don't have a lot of luck when it comes to this stuff, it would just bounce around all over the place, like, hey, your last block is in the upper left-hand corner. I'm going to go just bounce around repeatedly in the upper right-hand corner, no matter what you do, no matter where you bounce me or where you fiddle the flippers. Mm-mm-mm. So, yeah, $8, I'd say try it. It's not awful, but it's a little frustrating. But for the diehard Arkanoid-style game players, of which there are many, and they would really enjoy this, I definitely say try it.
See, I'm of the opinion, like, the same way with the Neo Geo games, is that if you were to play this in an arcade, and I can almost guarantee you may never see this game in an American arcade.
Guaranteed.
Like, you would probably drop more than $8 to beat the game.
Is that a general you, or are you talking to me?
Just a general you.
Good.
Because I would honestly imagine a game like this would probably be like 50 cents a play.
Yeah, probably. Well, everything is now.
Yeah. Minimum anymore. So
right?
I think
fucking
$8
Pac-Man
for
$50 cents. Suck my dick.
Eight bucks for this to play it as much as you want and to change the amount of lives and continues you get. I think it's pretty cool, especially because it's a game that you probably would never otherwise see in America.
I agree on that count. And I'm a cheapskate, so I tend to lean a little bit more fiscally conservatively.
I hear you. But anyway, last game that we're talking about tonight is called Strikers 1945, also developed and published by Zero Div, also released August 3rd on the Nintendo Switch for $7.99. Play the arcade classic. A revolution broke out in shooting games in 1995. The Japanese brand Saikyo introduced a new enemy's attack, spread bullets not seen before then, and the history of a new shooting game began. If you are a shooting game fan, Saikyo Shooting that everyone knows is revived. Shoot. I love their title. Like, These and also the Neo Geo ones are like so incredibly Ingrishy, and I love them so
much. It's fantastic.
It is. I hope they never get like pure, like full English localized translations, because I love these so much more than play a brand new shooting game with new blah, blah, blah. This is serious and blah.
A classic of arcade shooting is being revived in a big way.
Exactly. See, you know what's up.
Yep.
I'd rather have, like, if you were a shooting game fan, Psycho Shooting that everyone knows is revived. Like, that's amazing. I love this. Like, not even ironically. I love it. Earlier,
no, that's pretty awesome.
Earlier, I think Chris Taylor and I were talking about the English of, like, congratulation and...
Yeah,
stuff like that. Like that.
A winner is you.
We need a comeback of that stuff in this world.
Someone set us up the bomb.
I feel asleep. Anyway, this yes. is a vertical scrolling shooter, very much in the vein of things like Raiden tons of other games that we've seen released through the Arcade Archives program with Hamster. Again, this very much feels like an ACA game where it has damn near identical menus and options and dip switches. You're able to adjust the number of lives you get, the number of continues you get. And it's just classic top-down shooting. You're able to pick one of six or seven different planes, each with their own standard weapon as well as a bomb weapon. Some of them will just like drop a bomb that destroys everything. One of them had like a whole bunch of planes swoop in from the corners, dropping bombs everywhere. One was like a gigantic fucking death ray or something that just shot out the front of the jet. It was amazing and it wrecked everything. As you go through, you destroy things, you pick up power-ups to boost your gun's power and reach, and sometimes they'll give you, like, little, I don't know, option dudes, like in Gradius, how you get the options that just kind of, like, follow you around. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I remember.
I can't think of, like, what you would call, like, mini-planes, I guess. Mini-me's.
Like little minions, almost.
Yeah, pretty much. That just follow you around and also shoot things and attack things. You go through the stage, you blow everything up, you try killing as many things as you get, you try collecting gold bars, and then you kill a boss, and you move on, and you do it all again. Something I enjoyed about this is when you continue in this one, you get to keep your score, which I enjoyed.
Oh.
I know in Gun Barrage, when you continue, it boots you back to zero.
Wipes you the fuck out.
So I like it when games let you keep your score on a continue. Makes you feel like you're a lot better than you really are.
Yes.
Once you beat the game, it gives you rankings of how you did through each one of the stages, and it gives you medals, like gold or silver medals, based on the score you got in the stage, how many of the enemies you shot down, how many of the gold bars you shot down, your time in this stage. So it's very much a game that encourages replayability to try and get high scores and the gold medals. And it's, you know, if you're a fan of shmups, top-down shmups, vertical shmups, $8. Again, I love these arcade games that release in America for $8. If you found this in an arcade, you would spend a shitload more than $8 to try and beat the game. Guaranteed.
Bullet hell.
Yeah. Fucking, yeah.
Fucking bullet hell.
Fucking bullet hell, bro.
Fucking bullet hell, bro. Bah.
And I'm a shmup fan to begin with. So in my eyes,
$8,
I think this one's a buy it. It was really nice. Good, really enjoyable. A lot of different options and replayability with the different planes and different weapons and fucking death rays and shit like that.
Nice. So,
yeah, I think back-to-back, these are two solid games from Zero Div. I don't know if they're planning on doing more or bringing them to other consoles. I hope these pick up like the ACA series does and just keep bringing them, man. I love arcade games and getting to play them in my own home without having to, like, touch some dirty tokens in the arcade. If you could find an arcade.
Seriously. They're so scarce nowadays. Unless you go to, like, a tourist attraction town and you go to Funland or something. Yeah. And then you pay $1 a play at that point.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find like Gunn Barrich and Strikers 1945 at Dave and Buster's.
Probably Dave and Buster's. It's funny. We keep seeing ads for Dave and Buster's out here, and we don't have Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, us either. Maybe MAGFest. We should try and find one down there, and we'll all go.
Nice. Do they have them down there?
I don't know. They might.
Do they have anything down there outside of Fake Town?
I don't know. Probably not in the harbor, but maybe, I'm sure in like DC area they would.
Yeah, that sounds like work.
Sounds like driving.
Yeah. Ugh.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's all the games for tonight. George, thank you so much for joining and talking Switch with me. I love having you on chatting Switch games.
My distinct pleasure, sir. It's been an absolute bore.
It's been fantastic. Did you say it's been a bore?
No, I said it's been a ball.
your crazy accent threw me off.
Pubic stained.
You should have waited for that until I asked for final words. Okay, so George, do you have any final words to end the show?
Pubic stained.
What's that, Rockin' Bot? You're right, Rockin' Bot. These folks are heroes. Wait, you want to play a guitar solo for them? Well, all right, Rockin' Bot, take it away! Stop! Rockin' Bot, stop!
I hope they burn in hell.